back to an exciting episode of the Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a special guest all the way from Germany, our first person ever from Germany, so we got another country off the list, which is fabulous. She's brought her film Eight Remains here. Julianne Block is here. Welcome.
Very pleased to be here. Thanks for having me.
That's great. So why Germany of all the places instead of setting? You don't see a lot of films set in Germany, other than war films, I would say.
Well, I'm German, so that makes it pretty easy. So I'm born here. I was going abroad for a couple of years, and I returned. And I figured for the genre I want to make, it's actually better than to shoot than in English. And there are a lot of Germans speaking quite well, or like are brought up bilingual. So there is there are people, there's crew, there's cast you can use. And, well, then the audience will tell if this is a success or not.
So where did this idea originate? Because, I mean, I thought of when I finished the film, and even when I started, it was a gothic horror. Like, that's really the way it appealed to me. Am I wrong thinking that way?
Not really. I mean, it is a twisted story. It is also a very – it's difficult to place it in the genre per se. So how it came across that we did this film was that I have a – I know an author who is very successful, a self-publishing author. It's Laura – Sommer, she is like the author of this film, and she came to me and said, I have funds put aside and I want to do a teaser for a low budget feature film. And I said, I don't think this is a smart idea to do. Let's take the money, make the full film. And then she came with a short story of hers I really liked, and we started developing this short story, and this is what is the result of this. I have to say, we only had a very limited time for pre-production and to get into everything. I think from the first idea to the first day of principal photography was like maybe 2 months, maybe 10 weeks.
Did you feel rushed then because you went so quickly into it?
It was rushed at places, and question comes up, like, why didn't we take longer? But sometimes everything falls into place, and if you then stop it, like basically what happens usually is the project is just not happening.
So where did you find your house? I mean, this house, I think, is the essential piece of your filmmaking. Without a beautiful house, I don't think you really convey what you're looking for.
The house was something which we found during the writing process. So this was also how it came. You know, like, we wrote it into the story. So since it was so short, we already started pre-production literally when we still were writing the script, so this is how we could then also make use in the story. Now, I had shot for a teaser of mine, which I did years earlier, in something called like the Film House. It's near Berlin, and the guy is very nice. He's actually a cinematographer, and he owns this big mansion which he rents out for indie productions or like commercial productions. And I asked him if this would be something we could use for this feature I'm planning. And he said, well, for people like you, because I know you don't have a lot of money, I have something special. So he bought this castle two-hour drive north of Berlin about 2 years back. And he wanted to get more indie productions there. It's very remote, which is like why he doesn't have like a lot of people shooting there yet. And this is why he actually wanted us to come there, and we could rent it for a very cheap price for altogether, I think it was like 23 shooting days. And there was like accommodation ready, like nearby. So it was like a holiday camp of sorts. Like, at least this is how it felt when we were shooting there.
So where did you find your leads? If you only have an 8-week prep time, you have a lot of work to do.
The lead actress was someone in touch with the author. Like, her idea to shoot a film was something which had occurred obviously earlier to her. And she was like in touch with this actress, and she recommended her. Now, Damien Gregory Bewaldis is the lead actor, so he was someone I have worked with before, and I was, and she saw him and liked him very much, and I said, let me just check with him if he has time. And this is what I mean, if you know, everything falls into place. So the house was there, so we had this castle, and we had our lead actress saying yes, and then we had like the main actor saying yes, so it was all our first choices, and all of them had time at that specific period, and not later, not earlier. So this is why we needed then to sort of rush into it. But yeah, you can argue the script could have needed maybe like a little bit more time. Some of the prep could have needed a little bit more time. But then again, like if the cost would have been not to shoot this film, I'm actually very happy about how it turned out.
Well, then you feel that you can argue that the script needed more time or this needed more time. If you're happy, then leave it at that. Be proud of your
work.
I'm happy. Then there you go. That's what I look at. I have to ask about the cake. I love the look of this cake for the birthday.
That is Laura. So, like, she didn't attend personally the set. So she actually was with us remote. She's writing from home. And she's quite a character, I have to say. So she's also on board as producer. So she has never produced a film. And if you think of someone who has never produced a film but tries everything to help out where they can as film producer from a remote location, not being on set, this is exactly how it was. So it was, like, for us sometimes weird. We got boxes of stuff. And then there was the cake, which she had written into the script, obviously, since it's her story. And she loves cake, so she found this cake maker, and then, like, we just got it sent to the set. And we was like, oh, this is amazing. We actually got three cakes. Like, the other two were for crew and cast to eat, and none of us ever actually really had seen one of those cakes, like, looking like this from close distance. So it was really funny.
So what did the cake taste like? Did it taste good?
Well, there's a lot of cream in it, so very sweet. So I think, well, the taste was not as amazing as the look, because after all, it's the cake.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they ever taste as good as they look. I 100% agree. Your look at the film, I think you're very, from costuming of Damon and costuming of the cook and costuming of Tali, they're all very different. I found Damon looks more like a beast, like Beauty and the Beast I was kind of going with. Is that your plan, to make him look huge, humongous, angry?
Since he is like the villain from the early start, this is definitely something like we kind of played with, like to have him. I mean, there is no doubt that he's the villain in the story, so it's not kind of like a hidden thing where you have to twist and reveal that he was the mean guy all along. So he's a... it's more the other way around, I'd say. I mean, spoilers ahead. So, like, having him being the incident of her actually going into this parallel world, or, like, the last seconds of her life, like, to relive her past. In the beginning, it's like he's the perpetrator who's forcing her to do this. And in the end, you can even look at it saying he is her savior in a way, because she has to face all those demons of her past and is ready to move on.
Now, okay, you bring a good point. Do we know if she's ready to move on? It takes her a long time to come to that conclusion.
It does, but she calls the boyfriend in the very final end, and she says goodbye. What happens in the future, that's unknown, but this is, like, at least something she decides for herself, that basically her life is not going to pass, but there is a future.
So when you were filming, did you have that in mind? Because, I mean, Tali doesn't really change, but all the other versions of Tali change. Do you know what I mean? Like, little Tali, it's always a different look for her, but her look doesn't change. So we always know her, and Damien's look really doesn't change.
Well, yes and no. I mean, her look doesn't change, true. Just in the final scene, and that was really deliberate, that she has, like, that she was wearing a different sort of dress. And throughout the film, she's still in Damien's world, which means, like he put, like, they were sort of also how he puts them there. And, like, for older Tali, like, I mean, again, big spoiler for everyone who wants to watch the film, like, watch it first and then continue listening.
We hope so.
Yeah. Tali older, like, when she meets her, like, she has the same black dress all of the victims are wearing. And basically, in Damien's mind, his wife is not a victim. This is why she's wearing red. But actually, she is the victim of his, and this is why it changes to black. And then basically, all his victims are against him. This is why they're still all wearing black. But her older alter ego is out, because she kind of lets her younger self see what's the truth of it, and that means she could move on, and this is why she was wearing different clothes at that point.
So I did have a little bit of issue with the time loop element, is the way I want to call it, with the narrative. I mean, maybe that's what you're developing on script. I did figure it out, but it took a little bit. How was shooting that? Did you know where you were going to put the doors and getting sucked in, like stuff like that? I think could have used a little bit more for the viewer. But, I mean, it does work itself out near the end, but I did have a little bit of problem in the beginning. So how was shooting for that?
I won't disagree with your criticism here, necessarily. This is why I meant, like, yeah, maybe a tiny little bit more time could have been used, but again. But having said that, at the same time, we knew exactly where the doors appear. We knew where it's what. The crew, like, not everyone of cast and crew always knew. I did. So when we just did one mistake, like there was one scene when she's walking up the stairs with a candle. You can remember maybe that scene before she meets herself, like, and goes into the room where she finally is killed by Damien. This is what, she actually was wearing the wrong dress. So like she has the one, like in the beginning with her flowers on, and then like it was a black woman. We're all like, oh shit, like we need to reshoot this. But there was only one mistake, and we didn't have really a script supervisor on board. So I'm quite happy that
I didn't notice. You're good. I missed that one. So
I wonder if we shot it. So she's wearing now the right dress.
Excuse me. So you have a masked villain at one point, which we do. He reveals himself. Where does your mask come from? Or is that in the script, or is that something you added?
No, it wasn't the script. So it's kind of like when she's like, that is the scene with her younger self. And that is more or less like when she was left alone. And this is also some, I mean, this is the second time she actually enters the door and she finds her younger self. And she still wants to change her past. So she wants to help her younger self get over something she's afraid of, which ultimately doesn't work out. This is why she needs to move on and why she can't save herself. And when Damien comes into the scene, and this is why he's wearing a mask, because early on he wasn't there when she was young. It's more like a symbol of like all the fear and everything, and this is why he's wearing a mask. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of layers, and if you don't like twisted films, I'm pretty sure It Remains is not for you, so you have to like this sort of thing.
That is very true. You have props like a teddy bear for the little girl. Is that her teddy bear or something you provided?
I can't remember.
Oh, fair enough. See, I'm very picky. I do look for those kind of things. So
yeah, I think it was hers, but I cannot say for sure. The reason being also, there are a lot of props in this castle, and we were allowed to just use them, so I can't really remember if someone maybe have found the teddy bear just somewhere and we used it, or if that was something she brought along.
So I did have a funny scene. Who eats cereal out of a glass jar?
That is something also coming from Laura, the writer. She was saying, like writing this, and also like looking at her different, like her other books and everything. Like very literature mainly for a female audience, and like a recurring theme is actually women. I wouldn't say with eating disorders, but the thing is like food plays a big role. So like you know the cake and then basically the cereal. So I thought it's a nice take, like kind of it's like for the character itself to do this. It's provoking. It's kind of like, I'm doing this. Look what I'm doing. And I'm like, I don't actually look at you. I know you are there and I'm doing this just to mock you. So I liked it in the scene, but it wasn't my idea. So
I liked it. It was funny. It made me laugh. Now, music really, I thought would play more of a prevalent role in this film, but it really doesn't till certain sections. Why is that? Did you think you needed more music, or you just liked the amount of music you used? I thought you needed a little bit more, but that's just me.
I actually love the music as it is. It was, we were going through it, the editor, the composer and I, and we picked sections we thought needed music. We picked sections we thought should stay silent, also to not be like overwhelming and overbearing with music, because I think there's quite a lot of score actually in it. But I have to admit also, I'm someone, and I know this from previous films, that I usually always tell composers less. I don't want like the orchestral sound, so it's kind of maybe a taste thing as well.
Now, when you're filming this film, I mean, you usually use strangulation. I don't think I'm ruining anything. Did you ever think of trying something different in those scenes, like with a knife or something else, or was that always the plan?
Say the first thing again. I didn't quite catch that.
Everybody gets strangled. Everybody is killed that way. Did you try shooting it with something else, like with a knife or decapitation or anything, or was always the plan just strangulation?
The reason being why that is not that normally, like if you hear, read, or do research on serial killers, they usually have some sort of thing they do. You know, like they have like their own list of things, what happens first, second, and then after. So basically, we thought we followed this plan to have this rhythm, like which kept occurring. Also, it made it, of course, easier if you show those victims and you have those wounds, like to have them all the same. And this is also why they're wearing like the same sort of dress in variations, which kind of like is the same what his wife was wearing. So it's kind of like that he himself has a trauma which he kind of tries to get rid of in this very twisted, wrong, and gruesome way.
So, and you have, like, I wonder if one of the shooting things you were avoiding was you didn't want to use blood, because there's really no blood in this film, for being such a horror film. There's nothing.
To be honest, like, when we were, like, on Amazon, when it came out, like, it was listed as horror, and I said, like, can we actually take it out? I think, like, we reach the more appropriate audience if it's more like a fantasy suspense thriller.
I agree.
So, and this is what they listed it now, so it makes more sense. So, yes. Like, it wasn't the intention to, I also usually say it's a psychological thriller because I think it's more of that than really a horror. I mean, the house itself looks like horror and there are themes of horror, so you can even say it's a horror thriller, but it's not a horror film. So, it's definitely not that. And if you want that, it's a wrong film.
So, I always like to ask about catering because it's one of my favorite questions to ask. How was catering on the set?
Very interesting. So, like, the reason being is we had no money. So, what happened was Laura actually made a food plan and she bought things for us to do. We didn't have a dedicated person to cook. So this is why this all went a little bit to pieces. And at some point we decided, there was a nearby restaurant, better spend the money and pay them to do that. And then it was actually like very easy because they were living literally like 10 meters away. They were preparing it, bringing it on set. I also am a fan of catering has to work out. We also like included, let's say, some wine and beer for the crew in the evening because no one could go anywhere. There's no network coverage. So it was really sitting all in one spot. And then if you don't pay a lot of money, you better have good food or at least decent food.
I'm in full agreement over there. What were your accommodations like for the film? Were they the easy? Because you said you couldn't stay in the mansion. You found something at a holiday camp. And I guess my question is, what's a holiday camp? Like a cabin?
It felt more like a holiday camp. Having said that, it is actually a holiday camp, like coming to think of it. So you have to, like, it's a very small town. Actually, it's a village where this castle is. The castle interior burned out a couple of years ago, let's say 30 years ago, like during the GDR time. So they didn't care about castles and such. So there was like a supermarket inside, other things. They kind of destroyed the windows. And then after Germany became one again, after the wall came down, basically it was empty. It was a ruin. And he bought it for a very cheap price. Now, that's one thing in this village. The other thing is, this small hotel with the restaurant I was talking about. So they have like 5 or 6 hotel rooms. Oh, too expensive for us. Then there is like kind of like you can rent an apartment. And then there is this old thing where in the GDR they had actually school trips. So it was a bit smelly, like a very old unused house. So it was actually the horror part of the entire time. And you have like bunk beds and like you have like 4 beds usually in one room. So we partnered up 2 and 2. I know that there was like the toilet sometimes, like the male toilet, the man's toilet was an issue. like it was clocked once in a while. But the thing is, you know, he was so funny, and then the rooms were actually okay. I think that in the final end, like, everything was fine. But that was all, like, in walking distance from each other, so this is why it felt like this. So the actors had the hotel stay, then some of us stayed, like, in the apartments, which weren't much better than this GDR thing anyway, and the rest of the crew was staying there.
Okay. That's pretty much my question with the film. But I do want to discuss you personally. You're a female filmmaker. You're in Germany. Is it hard to be a female filmmaker in Germany?
That's a difficult question to answer because I've never been something else. So I can't really tell if it would be easier if I were like a male filmmaker in Germany or if I was like a female filmmaker somewhere else. One thing I can say though, since I've lived 6 years in Asia and I did my first two features in Asia, very low budget. The first one was a no budget feature. You can watch it for free on YouTube if you want. So it's kind of odd. and the second feature, also very micro budget, but a lot of fun. And the support I had was somewhat easier to get, I found, initially. And I think the reason being is because I'm not really perceived as female filmmaker. I'm coming as a white filmmaker, and they still have a very strong colonized view of people. So if you come as a European person, you're interesting. That's like kind of the first thing. So it makes things a lot easier. Of course, they also think you have money if you don't, no matter what. But like somehow that was easier. Then I came back to Germany in Berlin, and I felt like I was one of, I don't know how many million Germans we have. I think it's 88 million. So for 5 years, I didn't really get anything off the ground until my son was born. And I think what happened then was, like, I realized, okay, my clock is ticking. I really need to get going. And since then, I shot two feature films. He's now 3 years old. And I'm shooting the next one in February. And fingers crossed, the next one ends this year. So, like, suddenly, like, it all starts happening. So it's very strange. I do think it's harder as a female filmmaker because more people, they never really tell you straight face, even though some have, that you are a woman and you can't do it. I have heard even this. But the opportunities are more for men, I think. So you will face more like funny questions. I had an actor saying once, like, well, and then she's looking with her big brown eyes on me, like, can't really angry, but he didn't trust me. And I said, well, what have my eyes to do with what we're doing on set? Nothing. So it's a little bit harder, but the thing is, you can make it if you want it. You have the same chances in the way.
That's great. I'm sorry about that question. I just was interested in the European market, so I've never asked it. So something different.
Oh, well, it's a very contemporary question.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you've got through it and things are going well. That's good. I think it's fabulous. That's what I want to say. So your favorite film of 20... Oh, sorry. It's time for fun questions, by the way. Favorite film of 2018?
Well, that's a hard one.
No, it's not.
Yes, I have a small kid, so I usually am a bit behind in what's, like, really coming out.
Oh, well, you can't say Paw Patrol movie. You can't have that. Sorry, you're not having Paw Patrol.
No. So, like, to see... If you ask me about, like, my favorite movies throughout, this is
okay.
Something I cannot.
Okay, I'll change it just for you. Favorite movies without. Give me something.
I really like Korean films. There's two which I would say are my all-time favorites. Like, the filmmaker is called Kim Ji-woon, and he has done The Good, the Bad, the Weird, and also Bittersweet Life. I would say those rank the top of my list. And then I really like to support female filmmakers. Oh, there you have Wonder Woman, like, just because, like, I think it really has, like, a superhero view which is different than most other films just because it's done by a female filmmaker. And I personally support this critic going around that it's like kind of taking your male glasses off and suddenly you see it differently. So I think this is true. So I really like this one. And there are some other female filmmakers, for example, Winter's Bone is also, like, really on the top of my list.
That's a great film. I do love Winter's Bone. Okay, your favorite food. And I hope it's German food, because I don't really know much about German food. So, your favorite German
chocolate.
Food. Pardon?
Chocolate.
chocolate? German chocolate. I have to admit that nobody knows. Somebody gave me a German Cadbury once here when I was in I live in Canada.
Cadbury is a German.
She said it was German. It had German writing and stuff. It tasted different. I did taste different. She goes, here, try this kind. I'm like, oh, my God, this is amazing. It was very thick. Had a much better taste than the Cadbury.
Yeah, there's a difference, I realize, and that goes for almost all chocolate. For example, in Malaysia, and like, I lived in Malaysia and Germany, so it's all sweeter in Malaysia than it is in Germany. So this is something I realized. I prefer the German chocolate, so... and I like it less sweet. I think it's kind of like more than towards the flavor of the actual food.
Since I've been on this thing lately, this kick, you live in Germany. What's a myth about Germans that Canadians should learn that's wrong?
We do not speak Russian. Like, I'm just like quoting questions actually not asked by a Canadian, but by some other people. So we do not speak Russian. We have running water, but of course we have no humor. So we are not funny people.
So you are funny people is what you're trying to tell me? I would say you're pretty funny, so I'd say you are. But yeah, that is a bit.
We do believe we are funny, but you know, like there's this ongoing joke about Germans not being able to make any jokes because like we're just not funny. One thing, okay, I have one thing for you. If you have people, Germans, speaking very good English and they come with weird jokes, some jokes you make, like if you kind of twist words and you put them together in a different order, that is it's very likely the case that he or she is German, because this is something you can do with the German language, and we try this in other languages and nobody finds it funny, just us.
That's great. Tell everybody where they can find your film.
Amazon.com, Amazon Prime, or you can rent it on Amazon Prime Video if you don't have Prime, the Prime account. You can watch it in the U.S. as well as in Great Britain, in Germany, and all other English-speaking countries.
That's awesome. Thank you for your time. You were awesome.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed this.
Okay. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.